you know, I think that regardless of whether or not the U.S. commits ground forces, the fact that U.S. troops are being used to kill from neighboring countries, I think that weighs heavily on people. Look, this is so connected to the past several years. This doesn't just come out of nowhere. You know, we know that in the American society broadly, the genocide in Gaza caused a significant shift in consciousness among people in the United States, in particular, young people in the United States. And the military is made up of young people in the United States. And so that shift in consciousness has happened in the military as well. And they have been watching and decided that they couldn't support a government that would kill children with impunity. And then here we are in a war that the U.S. is not only waging with that country, but begins that war by carrying out the kind of action that Israel became notorious for throughout that war. And so they're having to look at themselves and say, what am I willing to do? What kind of person am I? Can I be a part of the kinds of atrocities that I've turned against over the past several years?
And we just have 10 seconds, but several cases of service members who have imminent deployments being taken off the deployment roster when they're considering applying for conscientious objector status.
That is something we can fight for. Your command is obligated to accommodate your beliefs. Look, most people will say you joined the military. It doesn't matter if you think it's immoral. You signed up for this. You have to follow orders. Well, nobody signed up to violate their conscience. Nobody signed up to violate their deeply held beliefs. And you know what? There are DOD policies that can protect you from having to exercise that. And we
Mike
can help
Price,
you exercise that.
I want to thank you so much for being with us, Executive Director for the Center on Conscience and War. Tune in tonight at 7 to our live stream at democracynow.org for our 30th anniversary celebration of Democracy Now! Featuring Angela Davis and Patti Smith and Michael Stipe and so many others. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
You're listening to KBOO Portland at 90.7 FM.
Goodbye.
Another politician sitting far away. This is the battleground.
Hi, I'm Jeff Rosenberg. Tune in to the Song Circle every Friday afternoon at 1:30 p.m.
Turn their backs on the grisly scenes traced to the privileged sons. And your death will come soon.
You never know what you'll hear next.
Support for KBOO comes from our members and from Energy Trust of Oregon, empowering businesses throughout the region with energy-efficient solutions that can help to improve the comfort, safety, and productivity of businesses. More info at energytrust.org. Energy Trust of Oregon.
Good morning, and you are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO FM, 90.7 FM in Portland, 91.9 in Hood River, and 104.3 in Corvallis. Via the World Wide Web, it is KBOO.FM, and today is Monday, the 23rd of March, 2026, and if you are listening live, it is approximately 8:02 a.m. I am Cecil, and I am your host this morning. Thank you so much for joining us this morning and for allowing us to be a part of your morning routine. If you would like to participate in our conversations this morning, you are invited to give us a call. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And then when we open up the line, that will be your opportunity to speak and to allow your voice to be heard. Lots of things are going on these days, and I thank you for taking some time to begin your morning, your week, by being part of this conversations. It occurs to me in a conversation with our engineer that this March right now, it's the sixth anniversary of the COVID shutdown. So 6 years ago right now, everything came to a close. And life changed for all of us, that we are only now, I think, trying to live out. What does that mean for us? How do we live? How do we encounter one another in many different ways? So this morning there's much going on, and I would hope that a part of our conversation is not only talking about not necessarily talk about the COVID shutdown, but about how we are a conversation about organizing and about accountability. A week ago, many of us were, woke up and read what Cesar Chavez and the horrendous things crimes he committed, abuse and raping of girls and women, and we are all trying to understand that, but also in terms of questions of accountability. A part of what I want to hear from you is your reflections about accountability, especially in organizing circles. Seth Maxson wrote in Vox.com, speaking about Chavez and farm workers organizing. Seth wrote, we need to kind of democratize the honoring of the movement. Speaking of the farm workers movement, he said, there were leaders, there were community activists, there were movements in places like Bellingham, Washington, and Woodburn, Oregon, and places all over the country. But the movement would be led by their communities. And so I think it would be fitting for us to remember the farm workers' movement as that collectively that had its various colors and permutations in these specific places, and to have the art and the honorific symbols reflect that. So much of our society is focusing on individuals, and there's a worship of heroes. And certainly, we are all humans, and we all should be held accountable for our actions. But I think a danger lies for us when we focus on individuals and instead on movements, and specifically, what do we mean by movements? I also want to hear your reflections about how do we create true gender justice? Again, in a brief conversation with our engineer this morning, we were reflecting on the lack of accountability and how in movements, particularly in movements of leftist movements, how gender justice remains something that we need to struggle for. So how do we democratize a movement, create a movement that not characterized by paranoia and looking for the traitor inside, which I think many of us have seen and witnessed in our movements, in our various circles. It's a fear of the other, that there is someone on the inside, and so we close circles and we aren't honest with one another, pointing fingers. how do we assure accountability? Where does truth, accountability, and reconciliation take place, and how can it take place? So what are your thoughts, and how do we create movements that honor and respect all people and hear other voices? Part of the challenge and part of the critique of Chavez and the movement was that not only was there a creation of a cult of personality, which we've seen in many different ways in our world and in our nation, but there is a inability to have honest critique. And how do we ensure that our movements include all voices, lift up those voices that are marginalized, and have a truly small d democratic movement where all voices are heard? And for those who are cis males, how do we honor and how do we hold ourselves accountable and hear the voices of women and create true gender justice? How do we democratize our movements, and how do we create a world in which all voices, especially those who are marginalized, not heard? Let me hear some of your reflections, particularly about movements in leftist circles. My perspective that, and I'm not familiar with movements. I'm not speaking of, you know, what happening in right-wing movements, but within odd circles, how do we hold ourselves accountable, and how do we create true justice within our movement? We often say that we are seeking a just society, but in that effort, the how we do it does not match up with our rhetoric, our public rhetoric. Our private behavior does not match up with our public rhetoric and what we seek, and how do we hold ourselves accountable. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. Let me hear some of your thoughts and some of your reflections. Perhaps you have some thoughts about movements in general, or some thoughts about where do we go from here in terms of hearing the voices and lifting up the voices and creating movements of those who are marginalized, and how do we hold ourselves accountable? Is truth, accountability, and reconciliation possible? And what does it take for us to create those type of movements, and what type of world we want to create? You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I am Cecil, and I solicit your thoughts, your reflections, not only on the uncovering of Cesar Chavez, and but more particularly about what lessons do we learn about organizing, and how are we held accountable? I'm interested in hearing in your stories about organizing. Where did you see in your organizing circle fail to live up to our rhetoric? And how do we hold one another accountable? I'm interested in ways in which that has been successful, as well as hearing stories where we either become disenchanted, disappointed, defeated by the injustice we see in justice movements. It's something that's not only a critique of the right, but if we are honest, I think is a critique of the left and all movements. We see the lack of gender justice throughout our society in movements, in organizations, in religious circles, in many places. Where do we find accountability, and how do we seek a better world? Also coming up this week is the third No Kings gathering throughout the nations. The first two No Kings movements happened in 2025, as we were just beginning to understand and to organize against the Trump overreach. The gatherings this weekend will probably include millions of people, surpassing the 7 million who participated in the activities and rallies last fall. This No Kings rally comes partially in response to the overreach of ICE, and as particularly as we saw it happening in Minnesota, the killing of activists and the horrible actions of this federal administration in terms of refusing to hold ICE, ICE officers, ICE agents accountable, and berating the brave souls who lost their lives. So this weekend, how do you see yourself participating in No Kings activity? Are you participating in your communities? Are you participating in large rallies or small rallies? And how do you see the movement going forward in terms of challenging this regime? We are engaged in a war without any authorization, without the arrogance of the president, refusing to even offer a rational explanation why we are engaged in this war. There has been no Oval Office address. There has been no request from the Congress to authorize military action, and the president seems to change his position daily, and we only know this by his by what he writes on social media. What a way to run a government. How do you think we ought to respond, and how do we think we ought to act? One other thing that would be interested in hearing, the Oregon State Legislature has ended its short session, and many things have been done, some successes, some failures. There have been some movements on immigrations, such as prohibiting data brokers from providing data to others for enforcing civil laws without a court order. bill passed also limits the circumstances under which a landlord may disclose confidential information. Bill passed, which requires officials at public schools, colleges, and universities to adopt policies on how they will respond when federal immigrant agents are on school property. Bill passed providing that immigration status is not admissible as evidence in a civil proceeding. And another one that allows civil action against federal agents and law enforcement officers from other states under specific circumstances. There's also bills passed in terms of housing and several, such as prohibiting cities and counties within the Portland metro area from requiring developers to provide affordable housing in multiple units dwellings unless the city or county first calculates and offsets the developer's expected losses. Bill passed, which authorizes the Housing and Community Services Department to fund mixed-income housing. Another bill passed to adjust some terms of the revolving loans program for cities and counties to fund affordable housing. And another bill passed to direct school districts to adopt policies that provide for immediate enrollment, school placement, and services to students experiencing homelessness. So there have been movement in terms of addressing housing and the crisis that many of people are facing. There have been bills passed in terms of addressing immigration, but there have been bills that did not pass. What are your thoughts? Have you been following the short session? Did you follow the short session in the legislature these past 3 months, and do you have thoughts? So a few things in terms of what are your thoughts about the bills that were passed or failed to pass in the Oregon legislature this session? What are your thoughts on the No Kings protests, rallies that are happening in communities throughout our country this weekend? What do you think of how we should respond to the overreach of this administration as it continues to participate in a war without any pretense of authorization from the Congress? Can the Congress speak out and take action? And related to the Congress, as many of you, as spring break begins, might be traveling, you might face trouble in the airports, long lines, waiting to get through TSA. Will the Congress pass TSA funding so that TSA agents can be receive their salary, and those who are not working can return to work, and perhaps end the long lines in some airports throughout the nations? What does it mean that the president has authorized ICE agents to assist TSA in our airports? What will that look like? Will they wear masks? What will it create more confusion? And how will that work out? Will Congress pass pass legislation which will allow TSA funding? And And how will Congress respond to the president's actions? Again, our numbers are 503-231-8187. So a few thoughts I've laid out before I take our first phone calls. One is response to the revelations about Cesar Chavez, and more particularly in terms of organizing in leftist circles. How do we hold ourselves accountable, and how do we create gender justice? Are we taking action this weekend for No Kings, and what do we think we are doing, and how can we respond effectively to this terrible war that the president has engaged in? Let's go to our first caller and hear their thoughts. And our first caller is Santiago. Good morning.
Good morning. You know, when I heard about what happened with Cesar Chavez, it's not surprising. You know, the fact of the matter is that, like, he was a notorious assimilationist and was a very anti-immigrant. He was known to frequently call INS. I mean, he said he did it in the name of the farm workers movement. I mean, ultimately, he saw a clear distinction between himself as a, you know, as a Mexican American and the illegals, so to speak, as the Mexican nationals. When in reality, the people who were fighting, who we've always fought against, have never seen a difference. They don't care about the difference. I mean, they care if we play their game, but at the end of the day, you know, if we're around and brown, they'll take us down every time. So, you know, but it was that kind of, but it's that kind of mentality that made him such, I mean, such a questionable figure within the Chicano movement, because he was, I mean, you know, what happened with him is a huge part of like what the movement was. But the other part of it is too, is that there's other figures who go, there's two other figures who get overlooked. Number one is Dolores Huerta. You know, I mean, she's the one who coined Si Se Puede, but, you know, but that's always attached to Cesar for some reason. And the other one is Larry Iti, if I'm saying it wrong, Filipino folks correct me, but it's Larry Itilong. Mm-hmm. Itilong. He was a Filipino, him and yes. Dolores Huerta organized long before Cesar Chavez came along. He was just became the face of the movement.
Right.
And I mean, you know, and I mean, and it's, you know, and it's just, I think the way that we create gender justice, and like it's about operating from a place of truth. I mean, the biggest problem with a lot of the movements of the 60s, and it wasn't just the farm workers, it was the Brown Berets, it was the Black Panthers, it was that, you know, they were working, it was a lot of, I mean, it's a lot of standpoint epistemology, which is helpful, you know. But it's like, but so much of it was not rooted in, like, you know, in what more successful ends of the movement were rooted in, which was scientific socialism, which is, you know, getting a clear understanding of the information in front of us, not just going based on vibes, which kind of ties into my critique, which is always tied into my critique of No Kings in 50-51. You know, the organizers want to instill a vague sense of patriotism within the people who are protesting, but ultimately the problem is America, you know, and it's the vibe, you know, and the liberty and democracy vibes that everybody keeps talking about, that we're somehow losing our democracy. It's like, you know, like there had to be an entire genocide of people to create your democracy, and nobody really discusses that, or that, that Black folks had to be brought here in chains in order to fund this democracy, you know, and that the founding fathers were just as deplorable and reprehensible as Franco or Hitler. You know, but somehow we find ways to revere these men. And it's like, and if you as a person who says that you're devoted to freedom and liberation continues to speak in the words of American exceptionalism, it just leads back to the same thing.
So how do we, in your initial critique of Chavez and the movement, how do we create movements that does not repeat those type of injustice within our movement and create a more just world. You hinted at scientific socialism, but within our circles, how do we hold ourselves accountable?
Well, you organize. I mean, the easiest way is to organize based on the basis of labor. You know, that's what Cesar Chavez missed. You know, that's what a lot of people miss. You know, the FBA and ADOS people, that's what they miss too, is that the working class is the working class no matter where they exist.
Mm-hmm.
And we need to organize in solidarity with workers in other countries. You know, we need to, you know, if it means we need to raise, you know, and that means even if it means being called un-American and being called a terrorist. Because ultimately, it's the terrorism of the United States against poor people in other countries in order to exploit labor and resources that create the types of situations we're in. And we're taught as the bourgeois workers of the imperial core that somehow our labor is worth more than one of our brothers and sisters or siblings in overexploited third world countries.
Yeah.
You know, they didn't become third world. They were created. They were made to be third world because the imperial core needs more resources than the rest of that could feed the rest of the world, take care of the rest of the world 100 times over. You know, we have to see our solidarity with people in other countries, and even if it means organizing against in the moment. What would be our best interest as a country? Because that's what a lot of people miss too, is that some things that would be good for us in the short term are not good for people in the long, other people in the long term. And so sometimes that means we're going to have to miss out on something in order to create that necessary working class solidarity. It's not going to come from saying, hey, I need to make sure my needs are met. And yes, we do. But at the same time, if we don't see that taking care of ourselves means stealing food or money or work or something out of another person's mouth, then we're all doing is creating a downhill slippery slope to the same thing that got us here in the first place. Okay. There's nothing special or exceptional about America. There's nothing. And if what really comes down to it, we shouldn't be proud of our country. There's nothing to be proud of in it. What we should be proud of is the people who work hard to give people what minuscule rights we have had in the past. And they didn't, you know, the myth of American exceptionalism will fold the successful movements as an inevitable cause of American democracy, and while knowing full well that the history of it was killing and destroying people who sought equality everywhere.
And, you know,
so I'm just saying it.
Yeah. I'll let you finish and then want to ask you a question. I'm sorry.
Oh, no, it's fine. It's fine, brother. No, I'm just saying, like, there's nothing to be proud of as an American. I don't care, you know, and I know it's going to get a lot of white folks mad, you know, because they love their country. But there's nothing to be proud of here unless you have bought into the myth, unless you bought into the mythology. The founding fathers were evil. You know, every president has been a war criminal, even the ones you like. We have to stop believing these lies. They're fairy tales.
Well, and
all of them. Go ahead and answer your question.
Yeah, and I want to expand, you know, your observation in terms about the myth of American exceptionalism. I think we all often fall into that by how we build, construct our movement. I think you very accurately talk about the failures of movements on Brown Berets, Black Panthers, and other movements of the 60s. But I think we also create this myth of exceptionalism in terms of how we buy into the myth of there is a leader that we must follow, and their word is must be accepted without any critique. And so how do we create democratic, small d, workers' movement, which lift up all workers rather than particular individuals, which can create this myth of a savior?
Well, I mean, the first thing we have to do is we have, like I said, it comes, I mean, I don't have all the answers. I mean, I'm just one person. But when you see the successful revolutions, whether you want to believe it or not, because I keep coming back to it. You know, Russia was a successful attempt at socialism. I mean, granted, it failed, but in the 75 years that it existed, it created egalitarianism across the board in a way that many other countries have failed to do up until the rise of China. And people will say, hey, you know, they're a one-party system, blah, blah, blah. But if you look objectively at the numbers that come out of there from sources that would wholly be against, that are not even socialist in nature. Like, I mean, even the CIA did a study of the USSR in its prime and found that it met the caloric intake of all of its people better than the United States.
Okay.
And you're talking about, you know what I mean? It's just, the thing is we have to be educated in the successful revolutions, whether, and this is where it comes back to vibes, because there's a lot of people who have been indoctrinated with the idea that, you know, these socialist countries are these evil places and they don't really have democracy. But you got to stop looking at it from the lens of the people who want to enslave you. They don't want you to see that there's another way, be it imperfect, that has a different way of doing things. And also looking at it through the lens that America has spent untold millions and billions of dollars adjusted for inflation to keep the imperial boot on the neck of these countries. There's so much money that's been thrown into into subjugating Cuba for 60 years. There were whole sanctions placed on the USSR from its inception, not just by the US, but by Europe, because they ultimately did not want to see any of these places flourish. And even in the best of places with the best of intentions, when you forcefully shove poverty onto people, it creates problems.
Okay.
And we need to have a better educated, better outlook on, because I mean, Americans are spoiled.
Okay.
You know, their whole, you know what I'm saying? It's just,
I do. And you're saying a lot, and take a breath, Santiago, because there's so much there. Yeah. I need to let you go because the other call is behind you, but I also want us to take what you said, and I want to think about, well, looking at these societies, and again, whether you think of leftist or right movements, there seems to be creation of cults of personality, which I think is a danger. So you look at the Soviet societies and statues of individuals. You look at China and statues of individual. You look at right-wing authoritarian governments and statues of individuals and the failure to create movements which continue to honor many, many people. That's a challenge, and we need to get beyond, I think, in part, the cult of personality which prohibits us from creating mass movements which lifts up all peoples. But thank you so much for your calling.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much for calling. And I appreciate your thoughts. You're listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, 503-231-8187. That was Santiago with some of his reflection. Next up is Molly. Good morning, Molly. Thank you for waiting.
Yes. Oh, good morning. Well, no, I'm listening to the conversation. Santiago, who always chimes in so well, and you know, it started out, I mean, he's of the culture of Cesar Chavez, which started, and that must affect him deeply, too. Mm-hmm. And here it is, the month after Black History Month, which I know affects you, I think, Cecil. And now here it is, Women's History Month, which the whole Cesar Chavez thing did bring up.
Yeah.
I'm wondering if we're going to change our 39th Avenue in Portland. I think probably it'll happen, actually, because evolution is so slow, and we're just so painstakingly dragging along in our evolution. I'm so happy that there is another big march this coming weekend, and I think this means a lot. And as I mentioned, I think even last week, about the importance of Gandhi's life on this planet, and how Martin Luther King followed that, and we are still trying that attempt, because I think it's really the only attempt of nonviolence that's going to work in this world. And I even heard on Amy Goodman earlier that, you know, if we're going to have a draft and we're going to send all these people to Iran, well, you can be a conscientious objector today too. You can refuse to go, even if you, thousands of people in this country were to go to jail, even like they did back in the Vietnam War times, then this would send a huge message to the whole world that not everyone wants this. And I just want to also say, in the name of women, I think men are just going to have to, like the Native American, some tribes had the grandmothers running the show, and they were like, okay, every single decision we make is going to be based on how will this affect the next seven generations. Certainly not the atomic bomb run by AI is not one of the options, even though AI thinks it is. But I think we just have to give it up to the women, and because I believe that women, speaking of evolution, the men had to go out and kill. They had to defend their territory and kill the other tribe of men for the food that they ate, and it's deep into our DNA, the sword, the spear, the killing, where women, because they bear children, and every man is born from a woman, and every man hopefully loves his mother, then they stayed in the little, you know, camps or wherever they lived in the caves, and and they developed agriculture because they couldn't go anywhere. They had children that they kept them grounded. They developed language as they sat around the fires, sitting like, let's do something, let's try and talk. They developed society in doing that. And I don't know why men have to be so intimidated by this, that they have to keep running the show, because look at all the men that are running the world, all this. We still need a woman president to set the stage. Anyway, I just wanted to say
but let me ask you,
for all women.
Yeah, but let me ask you, I appreciate you for raising these points. How do we move beyond patriarchy in all that we're doing, and create spaces for women and for true gender justice? How, because we don't want to give up our power, and because and the use of and abuse of that comes with power seems to happen over and over and over again.
Right.
And I agree with you, you know, in terms of nonviolence, but also we can talk about the personal faults of frailties of Gandhi and MLK and others
well. Yeah, they all have them. Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Well, I wish I had a point blank answer for that, but I think I'll go to a more psychological point bent and say that we all have within us an anima and an animus. I know I have a very strong male part of my being that likes to build and create and do things that supposedly only men are supposed to do, kind of thing. And I think within men there is that tenderness and that love within every man. And I think I said on the last show that my father said, until men start staying home and raising the children, we're going to have these same problems over and over. I learned a new word, mountebank. I know most people probably know that word, but it came from a wonderful person, Ira Sampearl, who was friends with Dr. King, but he said, did I experience the presence of freedom? No, alas, freedom I knew not. One painfully discovers that the clever mountebank, that skillfully disguised imposter, is licensed the slave master. And there's that word, slave master. And I want to say in my little book that I write, freedom in Sanskrit means praya, dear, from the root pi, to love. Similarly, friend derives from freon, the old English for to love. Freedom is a state of love. There is no love without freedom, which in Sanskrit means love. And also, from that comes the cost of freedom, which is deepening, quickening, widening of our fearlessness. Entomologically, freedom in the English language comes from the two words, peace and love. So there you have it, freedom and love. The fundamental freedom is the freedom to live, however, and to live and look around on the world. And the gentle but biting remark of Unamo, and I wrote this down in my little, who lived back, way back in Greece times before, the Roman Empire. He said, only the slave talks of freedom. The free man talks of love. And yet, Basho with his, when his son wrote, and yet, the search is the search. On her deathbed, I'm going on a little bit.
Continue.
I've been thinking about all these things, as have you, Cecil, and how are we going to get through this time now? How do we do it? I just think every man has to pull on his feminine side. Every woman has to pull on her male side, get out there and do some work, get out there and march on the, do whatever things you can in your community to care for the people that are less privileged than yourself, because they're definitely out there right in our own neighborhoods, and just keep going on in this evolution of hopefully love.
Yes. Thank you so much, Molly. Thank you for lifting up those thoughts.
I love your show, and I appreciate having a chance to speak my heart, which is so like caged in there, like wanting to do something too. So this is one way. We just have to reach out there, like the women of old. Like, let's talk about these problems. Do we really want to kill each other? Is that the answer? Hey, maybe going to jail is worth it.
Right. Yes.
To refuse to go to war, like the Baez sister said way back then. What if they had a war and no one went? I think that's the answer. We all each have to individually just say no to that.
So
yes to the other. Yes to life.
Yes to life. No to all.
Yes to everyone having an opportunity to live. The basis of freedom, just to live. Exactly. Live your life. You only get it. We're all going to die. Let's get a chance to just live our life. We don't have to kill each other. We're going to die soon enough. Thank you, Cecil, for your show.
Thank you so much, Molly. And you're listening to More Talk Radio here on your community radio station, KBOO-FM. I am Cecil. I am your host this morning on March 23rd. And our numbers are 503-231-8187. We just heard from Molly, who will share some of her wisdom about of how we organize and how we need to lift up the feminine as well as the masculine, and how we need to find opportunities and spaces to create a truly inclusive society where gender justice is more than just something we say, but something we live into. Reina Lopez, who is the executive director of PCUN, Oregon's largest farm worker union, was interviewed last week on OPB. And among the things she said was that, lifting up the voices of women and how we need to echo in some things that Molly just said, to recognize their roles. And Reina Lopez said in part, historically women have not received the credit that they deserved, even though our movement taking great strides to better support women, we still have more work to do to achieve true gender justice. It is only when we start to truly walk and talk these values that we can really bring real justice into the movements. She noticed that the United Farm Workers is now run by a woman, Teresa Romero, and that she, Reina Lopez, is the first woman leader of Oregon's Farm Workers Union. And it's something, and she said that now we have two women presidents of farm workers unions. How do we truly change system that will create true gender justice for our communities? I think one of the challenges we face, and I think is that our society Movements do not change by having a person of color as the leader or having a woman as the leader. If the systems remain fundamentally oppressive, racist, and anti-women, how do we truly change system to that enable those who have been marginalized, those who have been on the outside, to center those voices, to allow systems of oppression to change and not for us to be changed into people who encourage systems of oppressions. That is the true test of a movement. Those are the true tests of movements. Not having a woman president or mayor or governor, if the systems do not fundamentally change. We are just changing individuals who continue to lift up systems of oppression. So how do we organize differently? Are there ways that we organize differently that challenge those systems? As Reyna Lopez says, you know, our commitment is being tested these days. And she said, I want to challenge us all to use this as an opportunity to not shy away from how women and children, girls have been treated in our society, but to really step up, especially as women leaders, to be able to really build the movements that our communities deserve. So how do we hear not only those voices, but allows those organizers and not create a movement that put up one person up on a pedestal? Let me hear your thoughts and your reflections. Our numbers are 503-231-8187. And let's hear what our next caller has to say. And Jeff has some words. Good morning, Jeff. Good to hear
you. Good morning, Cecil. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you for your program. The word accountability has so much meaning, and accountability is not only applicable to leaders, so-called leaders, or even representatives, so-called representatives. Accountability is required of each and every one of us. For everything I do, I must be accountable. And impunity is the method by which so many of us, not just in positions of leadership and representation, but impunity is how we act. Oh, well, I'm not going to be punished for whatever it is I'm about to do or have just done. And I'm going to ask forgiveness rather than permission because I don't believe that I'm accountable. But accountability is for everyone, everyone. The drivers, I've had a special problem with motorists who don't feel accountable for any number of things they do to disrupt our everyday lives. But not just that, everyone must be accountable. And I'm not talking about going to business school and learning accounting, although that is a kind of accountability.
Yes.
But each of us must be accountable. That's my thought for the day. I so appreciate you taking my call.
I appreciate it. I want to ask you that about accountability because it's a word, and I can think of you know I'm a responsible person, and I'm mm-hmm. I believe in justice, so I'm okay, and there's I think it almost comes natural, and just maybe part of the human conditions.
Excuse myself and blame others.
And blame others. Kind of yeah.
Yeah.
So how do we create systems that forces us to be accountable?
Isn't that the trouble? This is the most ungovernable of species in the history of living things on planet Earth. And must come up with systems, and has tried over time, as you heard your daily history lesson from the first caller. Personal accountability. It starts with, as you heard from Molly, from mother love. But I won't say matriarchy, because that's merely sometimes considered an absolute, just a counterpoint to patriarchy. No. But mother love will teach accountability, and it must be learned. It doesn't come in our organism itself. Somehow the ants and the bees are accountable for what they do, yes, but they are essentially a kind of a whole organism. The beehive, the bee colony, is a single organism. And so accountability just comes naturally to it. But with individuals, that's what we are, like it or not, they must learn accountability. That's kind of where I'm at with that.
I like that. Thank you so much. Accountability is something that we should strive for. It isn't something that comes natural, but because of our species, it's something we must learn. Thank you so much, Jeff, for your call. And you are listening to More Talk Radio. I'm Cecil, and let's hear from our next caller. Ted, good morning.
Hi. I like Jeff's comment, and I want to raise a difficult notion that I don't really know where you could go with this or how you could work it out, but I agree totally about accountability, and I wonder if there's some way, this is difficult, but some way that we have to be made accountable for our votes, so we can call back and say, these people who elected criminals, we know who you are.
Did
that
you
would be difficult. I know it's full of thorns.
Right.
I would like to consider that. And another area of accountability, I think, especially with modern technology, should be very possible, is accountability in the stock market. So if you invest in Exxon and a big ship sinks in Africa, you sell your stocks, we can claw that back somehow if we can. Those are two areas. The voting one, I don't know, but maybe we should have a discussion about it.
Hey, I think you're raising some very good points, and you know, in terms of being accountable. You know, there's a meme going around, I saw this weekend, where this reporter's interview this voter, and she's just talking about how terrible Trump is, and that she's responsible because she voted for him three times, and she's been responsible. And oftentimes we don't hold ourselves accountable. We say, well, you know, I'm not really important. You know, I just have, you know, a little bit of money in the stock market. You know, I can't be held accountable for what Jeff Bezos doing or, you know, Elon Musk. But you know, we're all part of that, part of the system. So how do we hold ourselves accountable? Good question.
Well, I think with modern electronics, it would be possible to keep track of, if you were an owner, if you were invested in Exxon when the Exxon Valdez sunk, then we can claw your house back.
Okay.
I don't know. It's difficult, but I totally feel we need to be accountable. I want to make one other brief comment, and that is we need to get involved in local politics, like spend a day a month participating in politics. I'm not talking about walking around with our friends on the street, but going to boring, difficult meetings and taking control. I think maybe we could fight our way up from local participation. And, you know, I don't keep very much account of what's going on in Salem that much, and I wish I did more. I have gone to a few Democratic meetings in the Democratic Party meetings in the town that I live in, but they're really stupid.
Yeah, right.
And I think we need to devote some time to being a citizen and being accountable. And it's not zero. It's not a Hail Mary every 4 years. It's monthly participation in making decisions. Anyway.
Hey, thank you.
I love your show. Kabu is great.
I appreciate your thoughts. That's so, so great. And Ted, you know, I think that's a great point in terms of accountability. We need to participate in local politics, and that's more than voting every 2 or 4 years. It's more than even going to a mass rally. It's going to those boring school board meetings, the water and sewer utilities meetings, those type of things. It's really important to participate. Let's hear some of your thoughts. Our next caller is Bob, and we have just 1 minute. Okay, last word.
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
I wanted to reemphasize a point that you made that almost never gets brought up, and I really applaud you for bringing it up, even though it was brief, and that is that it makes no difference of the gender of the human being that is given power. The power will be abused if it's excessive power, man or woman. It makes no difference. I can give you examples from history of women who have abused power and have been every bit as cruel as any man would be in that position.
Great point. Our time is up. I appreciate it. Yes, all can abuse power. Thank you all so much for being listening and participating. I'm Cecil, and I will speak with you next time.
You are listening to KBOO Portland.
KBOO Community Radio holds open meetings concerning the operations and programming of KBOO in accordance with requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation.